handed down today, one generation to the next. The Little House Stories. We are going to talk with, in a couple of minutes here, William Anderson, an award-winning historian and a Laura Ingalls Wilder scholar. But before we get into that conversation, we need to take care of a little business. AM 580 Program Director Jay Pierce is with me here in the studio. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Celeste. How are you today?
I'm fine.
Great. A good hour coming up, and we want to get right into it. But first, we do have some housekeeping here. The number to call is 244-9455. That's area code 217-244-WILL. If you're a Cellular One cell phone customer, you can dial #9455. And the reason to call it is to pledge your support during our fall fund drive for the afternoon magazine, the interviews that you listen to in the 1 o'clock hour, opportunities to hear what people have to say on various issues. You can ask the questions that you've always wanted to and get them answered. You can share your views, your thoughts, gain new perspectives on issues, learn things about people like you will today. And it's something that requires your support. So call now. Make a $60 pledge. That's a $5 a month pledge to help support this program at 244-9455. And Valerie Gadbury is in Pledge Central with the news of a very special drawing that you'll also be entered in. Everyone who calls between now and 3 o'clock will be entered in this drawing. Valerie?
Hi, Jake. Yes, it is a very special drawing. I have some of the books right here in front of me, but as you said, anybody that calls in starting from noon up till 3 p.m. will get their name in a drawing of a treasure trove of books about Laura Ingalls Wilder, and that's the writer who gave us the wonderful Little House on the Prairie stories. And I have three of the books right here in front of me, and they are just fabulous, and they are by William Anderson, the guest today, and it just makes you want to hear what he has to say. But I am so impressed with this collector's edition. I mean, I just think of my granddaughter is 1 year old, and I just wanted to get it for her. I mean, just like Celeste said, passing it on to generations, this pioneer life history.
It's so important to do that, too. 244-9455 is the number to call. Get in on the drawing. You know, even if you don't live right in the Champaign-Urbana, East Central Illinois area, if we are the public radio station you listen to, or just the radio station that you listen to for this kind of programming, we've heard from people in Kankakee today, Chillicothe, Glen Carbon, Eureka, wide area. People listen because there isn't another program like the Afternoon Magazine that I'm aware of on another radio station anywhere within our signal coverage area, which is pretty wide. And for someone to be listening in Glen Carbon, that's...
This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Our guest this afternoon, Bill Anderson, was on his way to a career by the time he was in the third grade. That's when he first heard one of Laura Ingalls Wilder's Little House stories. A seed was planted. An interest in Western history and literature took root. Bill Anderson is a high school teacher of American history. He has written articles for numerous magazines and newspapers. He's written more than a dozen books, some of which have been translated into Japanese, French, and Chinese. His books include A Little House Reader, Laura Ingalls Wilder, A Biography, and The Little House Guidebook. In addition to the books he's written about Laura Ingalls Wilder, Anderson has written books on the Trapp family and Mark Twain. If you have questions about Laura Ingalls Wilder, her family, and the Little House stories this afternoon, well, give us a call. Bill Anderson will answer them for you. He's our guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. Here are the telephone numbers to join the conversation to talk with Bill Anderson. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, good wherever you're listening, in Illinois or Indiana. The toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. 1-800-222-WILL. Bill Anderson joins us this afternoon from Lapeer, Michigan. Good afternoon. Welcome, Bill.
Well, thank you so much, Celeste. It's nice to visit with you.
Thank you so much for sending along these books to us, by the way, for our fun drive. And it's going to be a real pleasure to be able to share them with one of our listeners this
Wonderful.
Afternoon. Well, what was the first Little House story you heard?
Well, Celeste, in third grade, our teacher had us involved in a big project on Western America, the frontier, Native Americans, and so on. And during the course of this, she took a book off her shelf, and she said, I'm going to read you a book which will tell you more about the pioneers than your social studies book will tell you. And that was Little House on the Prairie by Laura Ingalls Wilder. So we third graders sat there in great attention as we heard one story after the other of the Ingalls family leaving their house in Wisconsin, traveling by covered wagon out west to Kansas.
Hmm. Your attention and imagination were captured right there in the third grade with those stories. Why do you think you were so captivated?
Well, I think it is because Wilder was such a wonderful storyteller, and I'm just one of the many millions of children and not-so-young children that have been fascinated with her books since they first appeared in the 1930s.
Yeah. So many people have read the books, and so many people have visited the museums and sites associated with Laura Ingalls Wilder's life and her family's life over the years. They are wonderful places to visit. How many sites are there, and what kind of interest is there among tourists and people traveling to see these places?
Well, that's an interesting question. Even before Laura Ingalls Wilder died in 1957, people were seeking out the places where her family had lived, places that were described in the books. And they also would stop by her farmhouse in Mansfield, Missouri, to visit Laura and Almanzo. So they had a steady stream of their book readers stopping by and just wanting to say hello or wanting to see the hero and the heroine of the Little House books.
Yeah. How did they feel about all that company?
Well, the Wilders were amazed by it. Laura would receive somewhere around 50 letters a day, fan letters, and in the summer months, she said that sometimes people would come knocking at her door at 7 or 8 in the morning and want to meet her.
Mm.
And she was very proud of that farmhouse that she and Almanzo had built on Rocky Ridge Farm and was pleased to show them through and answer questions about the stories.
Yeah.
Well, after she died in 1957, the visitors continued to come, and each one of the communities that she'd written about got busy and preserved or restored or somehow set aside the sites of the little houses so that they're safe for history now, and many visitors go through each season.
Yeah. Well, she wrote her first Little House story, if I'm not mistaken, in the early 1930s, and she was a middle-aged woman at least, and she was by then in her 60s?
Yeah, when Little House in the Big Woods appeared in 1932, she had just turned 65 and was gearing down from farming, but unknown to her, she was starting a whole new career.
Yeah.
Because she kept writing the books until she was in her late 70s.
She and her husband, Almanzo, farmed, and they were model farmers in Missouri. Maybe you would tell us about Rocky Ridge and their involvement with the community there at Mansfield, Missouri.
Well, the Wilders arrived in Mansfield in 1894, and they had suffered a long drought up in South Dakota, and they wanted to be able to farm on a smaller scale. And the Ozarks were being promoted as good places to have a small acreage, maybe 40 acres, where you could have fruit and poultry and dairy cows. And when they arrived there in Mansfield, they bought Rocky Ridge Farm, with a $100 down payment on the land, and realized that that rough, rocky soil would need some attention. So they studied and learned how to tame that Ozark land, and they were very progressive farmers, became very successful. They had a big apple orchard, and Almanzo's department was the dairy herd, and Laura specialized in the poultry.
And the farm expanded over time to include 200 acres, so it became quite a large farm.
It did, and they added year after year, and their house was very much the same way. They started out with a one-room house and then added room after room as they had time and could afford it, till they had a beautiful country home of 10 rooms, and it was a showplace in the countryside, and the Wilders were known as you said, model farmers. People got ideas from them and got inspiration from them. They were determined that life in the country should be a good experience and farming in the Ozarks could be profitable.
And Laura apparently started what we now know as book clubs, literary circles. And she also wrote pieces for the Missouri, is it the Missouri Ruralist?
That's right. Her first writing started for the Missouri Ruralist, and that was a weekly farm paper, and she became the household editor. She had written a number of articles about country living, household tips, farming tips, and also poetry and feature articles about her neighbors. So the 12 years that she spent with the Missouri Ruralist was really her apprenticeship in writing.
When did she decide she would start to write the stories of her childhood?
Well, the Wilder family, they were pretty unique because they had not one well-known author in the family, but two. And Lauren Almanzo's only child, Rose, left the farm when she was 17 years old, had a career in business, drifted into journalism. She worked for the San Francisco Bulletin and eventually began to write fiction, biographies, travel books, and political philosophy. Rose Wilder Lane was the first name in that family. She was well known for her serials in the Saturday Evening Post and particularly for her book Let the Hurricane Roar. And Rose encouraged Laura to expand her career beyond Missouri, and it was very much a money-making process. This was during the early days of the Depression, and Laura had always wanted to preserve her father's stories because Pa Ingalls was a wonderful storyteller. And with Rose's encouragement and advice, Little House in the Big Woods appeared in 1932.
So it was a source of income, and it also allowed them at that age to not have to farm, you know, not have to work so hard on the farm.
That's right. And Laura certainly made that transition well because her first book was an immediate success. It was the runner-up for the Newbery Award that year. And her future was insured because her publishers wanted more books, her readers wanted more books, and she was a sensation in children's publishing as soon as she wrote her first book.
Now, have her books been in print and in demand solidly ever since the 1930s, ever since 1932, or was there a resurgence because of the television show?
Well, I think they were always popular. They've never gone out of print, and slowly but surely they've worked their way around the world. They're in over 30 languages now, and when Laura died, she knew that her books were firmly established as classics, and I think that a lot of the interest in the Little House books was carried on through classrooms and classroom teachers who, over the years, continued to introduce them to the students, same way I heard about them. and librarians. Then in the 1970s, Little House on the Prairie was adapted to television. And of course, when something's on network television for 8 or 9 years, it certainly does make an impact in the American psyche. So we have two groups. We have the television viewers and the book readers, and some people are a combination of both, but yeah. Certainly Little House on the Prairie became a household word because of the NBC television series.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about Rose. She was born in 1886. She died in 1968. Did you know her?
When I first heard the books and got interested in the books, Rose was still living. She was still writing. And we had a project, I think, in fourth grade where we needed to write a letter to an author. So by that time, I had finished all 8 Little House books, including Farmer Boy, The Long Winter, et cetera, et cetera. And I had a lot of questions. I wanted to know what happened next to all the characters. So I wrote to Rose Wilder Lane, who was living in Danbury, Connecticut, and it was very exciting when I got a response from Rose, and she answered my questions and suggested right away that I visit the Laura Ingalls Wilder Home and Museum in Mansfield, Missouri. She said you'll see Pa's fiddle there and many things that were mentioned in the books. So I did have correspondence with Rose, and she died a few years later in 1968.
What questions did you ask Rose? How many were there, and what was the most burning question you had for her?
Well, they were very simple. For instance, I wanted to know what town was closest to Plum Creek. In the book On the Banks of Plum Creek, it's just called Town. And at that time, I didn't know this was really Walnut Grove, Minnesota. Laura said that she didn't mention the name Walnut Grove. She said she should have, but at the time she was writing her books, she said, I had no idea that my books would be treated as history. So I had questions like that. I wanted to know, of course, what happened next to all the characters in the books, because the series ends with Almanzo, the farmer boy, and Laura from the Little Houses being married in 1885, and I had found out from the World Book Encyclopedia that Almanzo had lived till 1949 and Laura until 1957. So what happened next is the biggest question.
Yeah. Lots of things happened
right.
In all those years. We have a caller waiting to talk with us. Our guest this afternoon, William Anderson, award-winning historian, and Laura Ingalls Wilder scholar. Our first caller this afternoon on line one in Champaign. Hello.
Good afternoon. I'm really enjoying the show. I would just like to say my Grandma Holt, who was born around the turn of the century, 1900, and my grandma and grandpa, who worked extremely hard as farmers here in central Illinois all their lives, and in the early 1980s, the only television my grandparents would watch was the evening news. However, my grandmother, my Grandma Holt, would just be so enthralled to watch Little House on the Prairie. It was like the only television show she watched, and I would watch her sit there in awe and laugh and cry, and that meant so much to her because she was so connected to that way of life, and it would be nice if we could get back some of that connection. That's about all I had to say. Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. You want to comment, Bill?
Well, I think that's a pretty common response. What I think is interesting that people that were non-readers or hadn't read the Wilder books got very interested in this family a century after they had all those experiences and were introduced to the books. And I hear even yet today people say, I watch Little House on the Prairie every day at 9 a.m. or 4 p.m. or whenever it's on in reruns, it's also very popular in Japan still on television.
That's
so
interesting.
That program had a big impact, as well as the books.
Were you a fan of the program?
I have to admit, I very seldom watched it. The premiere movie, Little House on the Prairie, was quite close to the book, and I thought it was well done. But as in the case of many television series based on true stories or books, it diverged a great deal from the truth, and as cast members left, Ingalls had a series of adopted children. It's kind of a common technique in TV, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I just was not too interested in it because I was more interested in the real thing and the books themselves. But I know that book, that program was important to many people, but it wasn't to me.
Yeah. Two questions that are related here I'd like to ask you. Did your interest in Little House and the Laura Ingalls Wilder books spur you to investigate your family's history? And do you suppose that has had that effect for other folks?
I think so. In the 70s, as you probably remember, when Roots appeared on TV, that started a real phenomenon in America for people to investigate their family histories. And I think Little House, the program The Waltons, all of that added to that interest. And it's kind of interesting. People research the Ingalls family, make family trees of the Ingalls and Wilders as they would their own family.
Hmm.
So I think that was an era in America, the bicentennial year, for instance, where we were thinking about where our country had originated and how it had progressed over the years. And in my own family tree, I was very fascinated because my great-grandparents were immigrants from Norway, and they went into Dakota Territory at the same time the Ingalls family were there and lived through the long, hard winter that Laura describes in 1880-81.
Let's talk with another caller. Calls come in from a listener in Champaign on line one. Hello.
That me?
Yes.
Good afternoon. I'm a Laura Ingalls Wilder fan also, and I have, I guess, a couple of comments. One is I hated the TV show. I didn't ever see the premiere movie, but I felt that the style of communication between the parents and the children in the TV show was very 20th century, and that even though they used the words, the forwardness, like with which Laura addressed her father and stuff, I just felt was not the way a 19th century child would have addressed her parents. Then I've also heard the theory that Rose ghost wrote the books, and, you know, like the, oops, close to the radio, that, you know, Laura did the skeleton of the story as she did in the first 4 years, which is still in skeleton form. It was never fleshed out. And that Rose actually did the fleshing out. Personally, I don't hold to that, but I was wondering, since you've really researched this, what you thought about that theory.
Well, number one, I was trying to be diplomatic about the TV show, but you said you hated it. I really did, too. And I never really watched it much. So we totally agree with that. But, and also, you mentioned the dialogue in the television show.
Right.
Very like a family sitcom that we might have today.
Right.
The language was certainly not the language that the Ingalls and Wilders used, and the whole atmosphere of parenting and being a child was nothing like was evident in the Wilder Ingalls families.
So yeah, it's like they dressed them up in 19th century costumes and had 20th century situations.
I have said that, too, because I think one of the storylines, one of their adopted sons was having a drug problem. Now, give me a break. I mean, a lot, and they had talked about divorce, and they had token black characters in the story. I mean, it really was issues of the 70s dressed up in sunbonnets and beards. And,
there is one black character in, I think it's Little House on the Prairie. It's
yeah,
the doctor.
Dr. Tan. Dr. Tan, he was a hero in that book because he really saved the Ingalls family from malaria.
Right.
Now, to your other question about the authorship of the books, about seven or eight years ago, there's a great deal of publicity about the theory that perhaps Rose had written the books. I've studied all of the manuscripts, the correspondence between the two, most of which is kept at the Herbert Hoover Presidential Library. We have four of the original manuscripts at the Wilder home in Mansfield. There's no question that Laura wrote her books.
Uh-huh.
We have the penciled manuscripts. Rose was a seasoned professional in writing at the time her mother started. And Rose filled the role of a very skilled editor. And Rose had edited other authors and had helped many a career along. And when her mother was just getting started, they collaborated on ideas. They made suggestions back and forth. And Rose typed her mother's manuscripts. Laura wrote in longhand. And I discussed this in an afterword, which has just been published in a collector's edition of Little House on the Prairie, and found that they really had good teamwork. I would say that Rose's input helped to make the books what they are, but there's no doubt that Laura wrote those stories. Those were her stories, and Rose certainly helped her polish them up.
Okay. I think Laura, being so young, when Rose was born, she wasn't quite 20, and that was her only child, and they lived away from family. So I suspect that they, in some aspect, had an almost sisterly relationship.
I think you're right. As I said in this essay about the writing of Little House on the Prairie, Laura usually agreed with Rose's editing suggestions, but she also held her ground when her technique or her method was something she strongly believed in. She said at one point, "I think you put too much psychology in this version." And I was fascinated in the last chapter of Little House on the Prairie. The penciled manuscript is almost exactly as we read it in the printed book.
Well,
and Laura did write her books, as I repeat.
Well, that's what I always thought.
Yeah.
Do I have time for one more comment?
Sure.
Okay. I went to the site of the Little House in the Big Woods last summer in 98, summer before last, I guess. And I was very disappointed in that because it's like a recreation. So it's a log cabin that's near Pippin, Wisconsin. And it's a log cabin, but it doesn't have any artifacts in it. It's made out of new logs, and it just kind of sits there. And in fact, it isn't in the Big Woods, but the literature I read on the tour said that that there weren't that many big groves of trees around there. So, I mean, they are fiction. They're based on her life, but they're not, the chronology, for instance, doesn't exactly follow her life. They're a little bit idealized. But the tour of the town of Pippin was very good, but I would recommend that people just skip the log cabin part.
Well, the log cabin site is on the site of her birthplace, and if you go to Wisconsin, you notice they have a series of what they call waysides, and that is the Little House wayside, and it is more like a little roadside park. And when I first saw that site, it was treed, and it had a lot more growth on it, and I actually found the spot where the Little House in the Big Woods was. It was kind of a dip in the ground, and some stones, you know, for foundation. So I saw it in its more realistic form. And now what we see there now is more a memorial to her. Doesn't really pretend to be a restoration of the little house, which is unfortunate. And after the Ingalls left that vicinity, that area became wonderful dairy country. So all the big woods were cut down, and we see now rolling hills and grazing cows. Between the wayside and the town of Pepin, there is a patch of forest, heavy woods, which is certainly, to me, more reminiscent of what we read about in the book.
I want to thank the caller for her call this afternoon and invite others to join us with questions and comments. This is the Afternoon Magazine. We're talking this afternoon about Laura Ingalls Wilder with William Anderson, who is an award-winning historian and a scholar of Laura Ingalls Wilder. He has written many books about her, in addition to having compiled some books and edited some books and written an afterword for a book about Laura Ingalls Wilder's work. The caller and our guest, Bill Anderson, were talking a little bit about, you know, was there evidence that Laura was indeed the author of these books, the Little House books? And Bill Anderson said, yes, there's plenty of evidence that she was the author, but that her daughter, Rose, was a very skilled editor. And I wanted to mention at this point that in one of the books that Bill Anderson has sent along for us to use in our fund drive today as an incentive to get folks to call the pledge number, to call with a pledge of support at 217-244-9455. This book, Laura's Album, is just a remarkable book. It's a kind of a scrapbook of Laura Ingalls Wilder, and there in here is a drawing in Laura Ingalls Wilder's hand, a pencil drawing of a cover idea, I guess, for On the Banks of Plum Creek. It must be fascinating, Bill, to be able to put your hands on some of these documents and some of the material that you drew on for this particular book and for all of them. But that's really pretty remarkable that so many documents, so much material has been preserved and has survived all these years.
That really is true, and I think that it's safe to say that almost everything that the Ingalls Wilders had, they saved. They were great savers, and the books, Little House books, certainly tell about their life, but those of us that are interested in more have a wealth of information to draw upon. So it was fun to compile this book, Laura's Album, which is published by HarperCollins, the same publisher that did the original Little House books.
Mm-hmm.
I also went through the same process in a book called A Little House Reader, where I edited and compiled a lot of unpublished writings of both Laura Ingalls Wilder and members of her family.
Yeah, and that book also, in addition to the writings, contains reproductions or what's the word I'm looking for? For example, there's a piece in here that you can actually see the front page of the Missouri Ruralist.
Yes.
And there's photographs and all kinds of great material in addition to the writings of Laura Ingalls Wilder.
Yes, and when I was doing the book, Laura Ingalls Wilder, A Biography, I realized that there was so much source material that it was actually more than a biographer needed to have or could possibly use. So that's why some of the other books have followed the biography I did, because there's such an insatiable fascination with this particular pioneer family.
Yeah. There's a wonderful picture in A Little House Reader of Laura swinging on an Ozark grapevine on Rocky Ridge Farm. She must have really enjoyed life.
She did. She and Al Manzo were real soulmates. They loved nature and loved that piece of property in the Ozarks. the picture you mentioned was taken with their little box camera. And around the turn of the century, they did a lot of just snapshots like any family would take of their farm and of their crops and of their animals. And we have a wonderful documentary of this family and how their farm progressed through the years.
Yeah. When you think about the years that Laura Ingalls Wilder was here on this earth, 1867 to 1957, you know, she grew up with covered wagons, and in her later years, she might have flown on an airplane.
Well, she did.
She did.
Oh. She did make her first and only flight when she was 84. She flew out to visit her daughter, Rose Wilder Lane, in Danbury, Connecticut. And it's hard to imagine this pioneer girl that had traveled by covered wagon and railroad trains that went 20 miles an hour, making a flight across the country.
Hmm. Well, we haven't really talked very much about Laura Ingalls' parents and her immediate family. Who were her parents, and were they lovers of stories and books?
Well, Laura's father, Charles Ingalls, was a frontiersman, and he was a fiddler and a storyteller. And I think that this family heritage of storytelling started with Pye Ingalls, because in the Little House books, we often have a story within the story. Pye will tell famous and wonderful stories that were favorites in the family. And then, of course, Laura inherited that talent. She could tell a wonderful story as well as write it. And then her daughter, Rose, took that same talent and became a very well-known fiction writer. So it was definitely passed on through the generations of the Ingalls family.
Yeah, and Laura's sister, Carrie, she worked as a printer and a newspaper woman.
Yeah, when the family settled down in Desmet, South Dakota, Carrie, when she finished school, learned how to run a newspaper. She worked for the Desmet News and then traveled all over the West. She could operate a newspaper, print it, write the news, do everything connected with a weekly newspaper.
Was she also a telegraph operator?
No, Rose.
Rose
daughter
was, okay.
Was a telegrapher, and she, as I mentioned, country life was not for Rose, so she was one of the first generation of working girls early in this century. And when she was 17 years old, she worked in Kansas City as a Western Union telegrapher.
The family moved around quite a bit, Ma and Pa. Why did they move so often?
Well, we were talking about that the other day when I was down at our Rocky Ridge Day, which is an annual celebration at the Wilder home in Mansfield, Missouri. And I think the first move from the big woods going out to Kansas, Pa really wanted to try it out in on the prairie. And circumstances drove them off that land. They went back to Wisconsin. They went out to Minnesota, immediately arrived in the midst of a drought and grasshopper plague. So the subsequent moves really were because of the bad circumstances and bad luck. Mm-hmm. So for about 10 years, this family really was on the move until 1879, when they settled down in South Dakota. And Mrs. Ingalls more or less said, "We're moving no more." And that's where they settled.
Mm-hmm. I understand that you wrote your first book about Laura Ingalls Wilder when you were 15. Is that true?
That is true. And as I told you, I had all these questions.
Uh-huh.
And my parents made sure that I got to the Wilder home in Mansfield and to Al Manzo's home in Malone, New York. And fortunately, at that time, there were a lot of people left that were friends of the Ingalls, friends of the Wilders, some of their relatives, and so much interest, grassroots interest. So I would just ask questions, and I got all this wonderful information and anecdotes, and finally somebody said, "You really should write this down." So my first publishing was a little book called The Story of the Ingalls, and that was sold at the museum to help raise funds for our museum building, which still stands there.
A fascinating story. And isn't it interesting to, you know, to think back that you were, you know, so young when you were totally captivated by Laura Ingalls Wilder and her stories. And
that's right. I would have to credit her for my career, which is teaching, and my other career, which is writing, because I really developed my interest in history and my skills in doing research, which have led to all my books, 16 in all, and not only about the Wilders, but about other subjects as well. So I really can say that it all started with The Little House on the Prairie.
Thank you so much for talking with us this afternoon.
You're so welcome.
William Anderson has been our guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. He's an award-winning historian and a Laura Ingalls Wilder scholar. He has many books to his credit, and he's written about the Trapp family and about Mark Twain.